The following previews are of graphic audio productions rated for mature audiences due to scenes of intense violence and sexual situations.
Smoke Jensen is an honest man trying to make an honest living.
I hear you're selling your stock, Smoke.
Most of it. Gonna raise horses, Monty. Oh, I'll keep a small herd, but nothing like we've had out at the Sugarloaf.
You using the rails?
I wish, Monty. No. This'll be a hard drive. All the way up to Montana, into a big valley. Town's called Blacktown. Fellow up there by the name of T.J. Dugan wants the whole damn herd.
But what Smoke Jensen doesn't realize is he'll be leading his herd right into the territory of the most notorious cattle baron in all of the land, Clint Black.
Well, the boys would be awfully disappointed. Do you really think this Mr. Black would harm a boy?
From what I've heard about him, I think he's probably capable of doing just about anything.
When Clint Black hears that Smoke Jensen is coming to town, he gets the idea to set an ambush and murder Jensen and his entire crew.
This is all that survived?
Yeah. We lost 13 all told.
The boys?
Willie, Jake, and Rabbit. They dragged Rabbit. Davey took a slug through the head. Johnson made a fight of it. Nate and Little Ben fought them to the end.
I found Jake's body. They shot him in the belly. He died hard.
But Clint Black will make one dire mistake. He'll leave Smoke Jensen alive and hungry for revenge. Don't miss all the blood-soaked action in Smoke Jensen number 10, Courage of the Mountain Man. In this one, everybody dies.
I'm hoping my brother will pull his horns and get straightened out.
Too late.
Why?
Because I'm gonna kill him, that's why.
Oh, what have you done, girl? And it was you. Don't you lie to me. Last man coming into the way told me a gemstone hit the Father Abbot, and that all the monks were amazed that someone had struck so hard and from so far away. They had wards in place against such attacks, so it said. So they and I know the assassin was a person of great power with the stones. Only one person I know could have done that.
Avalyn Desbris could have torn his head from his shoulders.
And Avalyn is dead. We both know that. And we know, too, who it was that has his gemstones. And one of those stones was Lodestone, was it not? And it was a Lodestone that hit the Father Abbot. So where is your Lodestone, girl?
Gelsepine has suffered greatly at the hands of Father Abbot Mongwart.
She acted rashly and without regard for greater events about her.
Events that she could not know of, since we have not contacted her.
Events that include the child in her womb? That fact alone should have stayed her hand. The Abelican Church will realize almost absolute control over the city now, and they will orchestrate every movement of King Danube, using security as an excuse. Your friend has cost us much.
Jiro the Assassin. You hit me hard, my dear. Do you see what you have done to me? And only by the power of the gemstones am I able to paint an image of my face as it was. And only by the telepathic power of the Soul Stone am I able to communicate so that those around me think that I am speaking to them. I know you, and I am coming for you.
Father Rabbit, you must flee!
Hinder her not! And know that when this day is through, our power will be even greater in Hans the Bear. Begone!
Don't miss the cataclysmic conclusion of the third book of the Demon Wars saga, The Demon Apostle, Part 3. And now, our feature presentation.
Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents William W. Johnstone's The First Mountain Man 16, Preacher's Five. By William W. Johnstone and J.A. Johnstone. Narrated by Mort Schilt. With performances by Christopher Graybill, Colleen Delaney, Richard Rowan, Ken Jackson, Ren Casey, Dylan Lynch, Terrence Hazelford, Lily Beacon, Michael Glenn, Tim Getman, James Lewis, Thomas Penny, Johann Detweiler, and Nanette Savard.
Three bottles of whiskey.
The killers lying in the tall grass heard the singing while the two men were still on the other side of the hill. It was a shame the white men had chosen that for their death song, because most certainly they were about to die. The six Injuns waited patiently. They had spotted the riders and the two pack horses heading toward them and had concealed their own horses in the trees. Watching from the top of the hill, they'd seen the white men coming straight toward them and had decided to lay their ambush here.
Bottles of whiskey on the wall.
That's a preacher. Preacher, you know what? I ain't passing that last bottle around.
Good God.
Oh, that's a good one. Let's sing another one. How about Yankee McDougal? You know that one. It goes like this here. Yankee.
The old man topped the hill. Two of the Pawnee riflemen leaped to their feet as soon as they saw the wide-brimmed felt hat and the long white hair and the white beard. They had raised their rifles to their shoulders before they realized that the saddle of the horse next to the old man was empty. The dead Pawnee's companion saw a tall white man with a dark beard stalking towards him on the side of the hill. The man tossed aside the empty rifle, and his hand swooped down to pull two flintlock pistols from behind his belt. The four other Pawnee were shocked into immobility for just a second, but that second was long enough for death to come calling. A couple of long-legged bounds took Preacher into the middle of the war party. Dog was right behind him, leaping through the tall grass. Preacher swung the empty pistol in his right hand and caved in a warrior's skull. Dog took down another one and ripped his throat out with a slash of sharp teeth and powerful jaws. Preacher pivoted and kicked another man in the groin. Preacher shoved him into the warrior who remained on his feet. Their legs tangled and both Injuns fell toward Preacher. Preacher yanked a long, heavy-bladed hunting knife from the sheath at his waist and brought it up into the body of the uninjured Pawnee. The Injun who Preacher had kicked in the groin was still alive, still holding the knife. Preacher went over to him and dropped to a knee beside him.
You thought to ambush us. That was a goddamn mistake. Are there any more of you around here, or were you and your brothers raiding alone?
Oh, go ahead and kill me. I will tell you nothing. Cut my throat, white man.
No, I reckon not.
Preacher took the knife away from the Injun's throat and turned his head.
Dog!
The big wolf-like cur edged closer, his lips curling away from his teeth.
I ain't gonna cut your throat. I'm just gonna let Dog here gnaw on you for a while. Oh, yeah, he's got a mean streak in him. He likes to play with his food for a while before he eats it. He's liable to start at your toes, just sort of nibble his way up. What band are you from? Who's your war chief?
This is Standing Elk.
Preacher nodded toward the other members of the war party. who lay scattered around the hillside.
He one of these dead fellows?
No, we were scouts from a larger party.
Where's Standing Elk and the rest of your bunch?
I will say no more.
Dog, you want a treat?
One sleep towards the sunrise. It is the truth!
Preacher waved Dog back. The big cur retreated with obvious reluctance.
How many?
As many as the fingers of four hands.
20 more warriors, huh? Well, me and Dan will avoid them if we can. All right, I reckon we'll tie you up and leave you here. Rest of your bunch will come along and find you sooner or later.
Kill me. I have shamed myself by talking to you.
Now look, there's only a few hombres in this world who are bad enough I might be tempted to kill them in cold blood, and you ain't one of them, old son.
Then let me die in battle.
You ain't fit to fight right now. I reckon I kicked your nuts halfway up your throat.
Preacher turned away. Behind him, the Pawnee struggled to climb to his feet, a knife appearing in his hand.
Preacher.
Preacher turned around again. Preacher knocked the Pawnee's knife aside and stepped in to bring up his own blade and bury it in the warrior's chest.
What's your name?
Bent Stick.
Well, if anybody ever asks me, I'll tell them that the warrior called Bent Stick died in battle with honor.
Many thanks.
Preacher lowered the corpse to the ground. Uncle Dan still held the reins of Preacher's horse and the two pack animals. The old-timer nodded toward the body.
Yeah. How'd you know he'd talk if you threatened him with Dog?
I saw him eyeing the old boy. Some folks are more scared of one particular thing than they are of anything else. It might be dogs or snakes or, hell, I don't know, bugs. I took a chance with this fella, it was dogs.
It looks like he was right. We gonna try to avoid that war chief Standing Elk in his bunch?
Well, you're damn right we are. We got places to go, things to do. I don't want anything slowing us down.
Preacher retrieved his pistols from the place he had dropped them.
If you hadn't seen them birds fly up and guessed there might be something waiting for us on this side of the hill, them redskins would have had the drop on us.
Preacher swung up into the saddle on the rangy gray stallion known only as Horse.
That was pretty smart of you, having me go on singing whilst you slipped round the side of the hill and snuck up on them.
Yeah, but if there'd been no ambush, I'd have wound up looking a mite foolish, wouldn't I?
Hey, better to be foolish than alive, I always say.
Can't argue with that.
How far you reckon we are from St. Louis?
I'll be there in another week just about, I'd say.
That arm of yours gonna be good and healed up by then?
Preacher lifted his left arm. It was splinted and wrapped up from elbow to wrist. But at this point, that was more of a precaution than anything else.
Yeah, well, it's pretty much healed now.
Several weeks had passed since the bone had been broken about halfway down his forearm.
I can use it without any trouble. Just aches a little every now and then.
Yeah, well, you best be careful with it. You want to be at full strength when we get there. Killing that bastard Beaumont ain't going to be easy.
No, but it sure is going to be satisfying.
Preacher had left his family's farm at a young age, driven by an undeniable wanderlust. Many of the years since then had been spent in the Rocky Mountains, although his fiddle-footed nature had taken him as far south as Texas and as far north as Canada. He'd also made a number of trips back east to St. Louis, and that was his destination now. He wasn't going there to sell furs that he had trapped in the mountains, though, as he had done in the past. This time, he was going to kill a man. Twice now, Shad Beaumont had dispatched agents to the mountains in an attempt to take over the fur trade. Beaumont was the boss of the criminal underworld in St. Louis, but that was not enough for him. He wanted to branch out, to spread his unholy influence over the mountains. And when Preacher had helped foil his first attempt in that direction, Beaumont had not hesitated to send hired killers after him. Preacher was still alive, and those would-be assassins were dead. But they weren't the only ones who had died. Innocent folks had been killed, and Preacher was filled with righteous wrath over those deaths. Some of the people who had died hadn't exactly been what anybody would call innocent, but they hadn't deserved to die neither, and Preacher wanted to avenge what had happened to them, too. It all added up to Preacher going to St. Louis and confronting the arch criminal on his own stomping grounds. Venturing into the lair of a vicious animal was always dangerous, but it was also the fastest, simplest way to deal with the threat. So Preacher and Uncle Dan Sullivan had ridden out of the mountains, following the North Platte River to the Missouri, and then following the Missouri on its curving course through the heart of the country toward St. Louis. Uncle Dan had his own grudge against Beaumont, since his nephew Pete Sanderson had died as a result of Beaumont's latest scheme. Over and above that, Preacher and Uncle Dan had become friends, and the old-timer hadn't wanted Preacher to set out alone with a broken arm. Now, it was true that by now Preacher's arm was almost healed, but he had to admit it sure had come in handy having Uncle Dan around to help with setting up camp and tending the horses and all the other chores that had to be taken care of when a fellow was riding just about halfway across the continent. The two men rode roughly parallel with the river now, through the rolling hills about a mile south of it. The Pawnee and the Cheyenne liked to lurk in these parts, waiting for unwary travelers to come along, and they were worse along the river. Of course, you could run into hostiles just about anywhere out here, as Preacher and Uncle Dan had seen with their own eyes today. They didn't encounter any more trouble before nightfall, but they made a cold camp anyway and had a skimpy supper of jerky and hardtack. The two men took turns standing guard during the night. The next day, they pushed on south and east towards St. Louis. Around mid-morning, Preacher reined in suddenly and scanned at the ground ahead of him.
Look at those tracks.
Yeah, unshod ponies. Looks like about 20 of them, too. That'd be Standing Elk and his glory boys, just like old Bent Stick said.
Yeah, heading north toward the river, I'd say. Maybe figuring on ambushing a flatboat or some pilgrims who come along on horseback heading for the mountains.
None of our business. Anybody venturing into this here country had damned well better know there's Injuns about. It's every man's duty to keep his own eyes open and his powder dry.
Yeah, you're right about that. Looks like Standing Elk and his war party passed through here early this morning. I'm glad we missed them.
You and me both, Preacher.
Yeah!
With dog bounding out ahead, as usual, and the pack animals trailing them, the two men rode across the trail left behind by the Pawnee war party. They didn't see any other signs of human beings until later in the day. The solitude was magnificent, with just the two men and their horses, insignificant specks, really, moving leisurely across the vast open prairie. Eagles cruised through the arching bowl of blue sky. Antelope raced by, bounding over the landscape with infinite grace and beauty. Herds of buffalo, as seemingly endless as a brown sea, drifted slowly this way and that, following the grass and their instincts. Preacher always felt more at home in the mountains than anywhere else, but the prairie held its own appeal too. Came a time, though, late that afternoon, when Uncle Dan pointed to the northeast toward the river.
Look at that dust up yonder.
Yeah, I saw it 10 minutes ago.
Well, why in blazes didn't you say something about it then?
Because I wanted to see how long it'd take you to notice it.
Uh-huh. And if you hadn't spotted it first, you wouldn't admit it, would you? Let a feeble old man beat you to it.
Oh, shoot, you about as feeble as a grizzly bear. You are God almighty old, though. I reckon you must be old enough to sit on a gravestone and hatch ghosts.
Ta! You will be too one of these days, if you live long enough, which means you better stop mouthing off to your elders. Now, what are we going to do about that dust?
Why do we have to do anything about it? It's probably just some buffs drifting along the river.
You know better than that. Buffalo move too slow to raise a cloud of dust up when they're stampeding. And if that was the case, there'd be more of it in the air. No, I've seen dust like that before. It comes from ox hooves and wagon wheels.
Wagon train, in other words.
Damn right.
Oh, good God.
And you know what them pilgrims may be headed right into. They keep moving upriver. They're liable to run smack dab into Standing Elk and that Pawnee war party.
Well, now they're bound to know they might encounter hostiles. You said it yourself this morning, Uncle Dan. Anybody who comes out here on the frontier needs to keep his eyes open and his powder dry.
Yeah, I did say that, didn't I? But I was thinking more of fur trappers and rivermen, fellas who can take care of themselves. There's liable to be women and kids in that wagon train.
Creature figured it was a safe bet that there would be women and children with the wagon train. He had seen it happening all too often in recent years. With the population growing back east, folks were starting to get crowded out. They wanted to come west to find new land and new opportunities. He supposed he couldn't blame them all that much. Hell, he'd done pretty much the same thing himself, after all.
You think we ought to go warn them? Tell them to be on the lookout for Standing Elk? It seems like the neighborly thing to do.
Well, I don't recollect asking a bunch of immigrants to be my neighbors anyways. Fact of the matter is, I wish they'd all stay back east where they belong.
Wishing's like trying to push water back up a waterfall. We don't have to go all that far out our way, and it won't take that long. We can just tell them about them Pawnee and then go on our way. Or they might invite us to stay the night with them. It might be nice to eat a woman-cooked meal for a change, or unlimber that fiddle of mine and play a few tunes with some of the other fellers.
Now, Preacher had to admit that didn't sound so bad. At most, detouring to warn the wagon train about the war party wouldn't cost him and Dan more than a part of a day, and that wouldn't make a bit of difference in the long run.
Yeah, all right, goddammit. Let's go see if we can head them off.
They turned their horses and rode due north toward the river. That would put them in front of the wagon train. 15 minutes later, they came to the broad valley of the Missouri. That big muddy had some size to it here. In fact, it wasn't even muddy at the moment. It was a wide, pretty blue stream that flowed between green, grassy banks. Preacher and Uncle Dan rode down to the edge of the river and reined in.
Yonder come the wagons.
Preacher looked along the stream. The wagon train was on the same side of the river he and Uncle Dan were. Several men rode out in front of it on horseback about 50 yards ahead of the lead wagon. Behind the outriders came the wagons themselves, a line of canvas-covered prairie schooners so long that Preacher couldn't see the end of it, each wagon being pulled by a team of either 4 or 6 oxen.
Fill in charge is probably one of those out in front there. Let's go talk to them.
The 4 riders leading the way brought their mounts to a halt, evidently waiting for Preacher and Uncle Dan to get there. As they came closer, Preacher saw that one man was sitting his saddle slightly ahead of the other 3. He was a barrel-chested hombre wearing a flat-crowned hat. A brown beard came halfway down his chest. Preacher pegged him for the boss of the wagon train. Preacher lifted his right hand, palm out, in the universal sign that said their intentions were peaceful. Now! The 3 men suddenly jerked pistols from their belts and leveled the weapons at Preacher and Uncle Dan.
Now hold on there! We're peaceable men!
The big bearded wagon master, if that's who he was, glared at Preacher.
You look more like highwaymen to me, mister. If you have any thoughts of robbing these poor immigrants, you'd better put them out of your head right now.
Highwaymen? Oh, we're just poor, honest fur trappers on our way to St. Louis.
That's right. His name's Dan Sullivan. I'm called Preacher.
Those names mean nothing to us. We don't know any of the trash that currently inhabits the Rocky Mountains.
Oh, trash, is it? Look, the only reason we rode up here is to tell you folks that there may be a Pawnee war party waiting up ahead for you somewhere in the next few miles. If Uncle Dan and I spotted the dust from your wagons, you can damn well be sure the Pawnees did.
One of the other men lowered his gun slightly.
You hear that, Mr. Buckhalter? Savages.
I heard. And I told you, Donnelly, that there was a chance of encountering Indians on our way to Oregon. You knew the risk when you joined the wagon train.
Yeah, but shouldn't we listen to these fellas? They're bound to know this part of the country. I mean, just look at them.
I know the country, too. This isn't the first wagon train I've guided west. And I know that this isn't Pawnee territory. The only Indians in these parts are friendly ones.
Why, you eternal idiot! Half a dozen of them so-called friendly Injuns tried to lift our hair yesterday, and they was just scouts from a bigger war party. You keep going the way you're going, and they'll jump you sure as shooting.
How many men you have along with you? Between 50 and 60, counting the boys who are almost grown. There are 38 wagons in the train.
Well, then you do got that war party outnumbered almost 3-1. Maybe they'll see that and decide not to attack.
Do you think we can count on that?
Oh, mister, you can't count on nothing. Not where Injuns are concerned. Just when you think you got them all figured out, they'll do something else to surprise you. See, Injuns is notional.
Donnelly turned to Buckhalter. I think we should do something about this.
What would you have us do? Turn back to St. Louis? Give up on all your hopes and dreams?
Now, I didn't say that.
Nothing worthwhile in this life comes without risk.
Yeah, that's what I always say. Only it don't mean a fella has to be foolish when it comes to the risks. Now, I know none of you folks asked me for my advice.
That's right, we didn't.
But I'm gonna give it to you anyway. Now get some scouts on fast horses well out in front of the wagons. When you make camp for the night, pull the wagons in a tight circle, get all the livestock inside. Post plenty of guards, make sure they're hombres who can stay awake and alert. Pawneel, slip up on a man and cut his throat before he knows what's going on if he ain't mighty careful. You make sure everybody who can use a gun has one handy and keep them loaded. Ain't gonna do you any good otherwise, because the Injun sure as hell ain't gonna wait around till you're ready to put up a fight.
Is that all? Or would you like to insult our intelligence some more?
Oh, mister! What the hell is wrong with you? Preacher and me's just trying to help you, and you go out of your way to insult us!
Oh, forget it, Uncle Dan. Some fellas just don't like having their authority challenged. I reckon Buckhalter's the boss here, and what he says goes. That means the blood of all them folks in the wagons will be on his head if something goes wrong. And ain't none of our business.
Preacher started to turn horse away, but before he could do so, Donnelly prodded his mount ahead of the others.
Now wait a minute. I don't know if you're right about the Pawnee or not. Mr. Buckhalter hasn't given us any reason to doubt his experience. But I'd like for you to make camp with us tonight so that everybody can hear what you have to say.
I'm the chief guide and wagon master of this train, Mr. Donnelly, and I don't appreciate you casting doubt on me by listening to these tramps. We all agreed that I'm in charge here.
I mean no offense, and it is true you're the wagon master, Mr. Buckhalter. But those folks elected me their captain before we left St. Louis, and I feel a great deal of responsibility for them. I don't think it'll hurt any of us to listen to these men.
We've heard them already, and I say they're mistaken.
It's pretty goddamn hard to be mistaken about 6 dead warriors, Buckhalter. And one of them, a fella called Bent Stick, talked before he died. He told us about a chief named Standing Elk, leading a war party through these parts. Uncle Dan and I crossed their trail earlier today, back yonder a ways. They numbered at least 20 men, and they were heading for the river. And like I said, you got them outnumbered. Chances are, most, if not all, of those fellows are seasoned killers. That means they're more dangerous than a bunch of immigrants.
Ride with us. Make camp with us tonight. You'll have a chance to speak your piece, Mr. Preacher, was it?
Just Preacher. No, mister.
Well, you can speak your piece, and I promise that we'll all listen.
All right.
Donnelly turned to Buckhalter.
Now, it's fairly late in the afternoon. Should we go ahead and start looking for a place to make camp?
Why don't you ask your pal, Preacher?
Whoo! Mighty touchy.
Didn't mean to cause trouble twixt you and your wagon, boss. We just want to let you know about them Injuns.
Donnelly shook his head. He was a middle-aged, solemn-faced man with graying hair who looked like he might have been a storekeeper or a lawyer back east.
Oh, he's been mighty touchy the entire trip. He'll get over it. I think he's just a very proud man who doesn't like having his judgment questioned.
Well, now it's a good thing for a man to take pride in himself. Just not so much that he can't listen to what other folks have to say.
The men turned their horses and rode toward the wagons. Donnelly gestured toward his two companions.
This is Mike Moran and Pete Stallworth, two more of our scouts and guides.
How many scouts are out now?
Two, Fred Jennings and Leah McKenzie. Don't worry, they're good men.
Moran was a tall, burly gent with a face that looked like it had been hacked out of the side of a granite mountain. Stallworth was short and stocky, with thick blonde hair sticking out from under a hat pushed back on his head.
You fellas work for Buckhalter?
He's the wagon master. It was Mr. Donnelly here who hired us, though, and him and the rest of the pilgrims were paying us.
Uh-huh. So there are five guides, including Buckhalter?
That's right.
Been to the mountains much?
I trapped out there a couple seasons. Know my way around pretty good, I reckon.
Preacher turned to Moran.
How about you?
The big man just shook his head. Evidently, he wasn't overly fond of talking, so Preacher just let it go. They were approaching the wagons now, and he saw a lot of curious looks directed his way. These folks had to wonder if there was some sort of problem. He saw fear on many of the faces. Fear of engines, fear of the wilderness, just fear of the unknown in general. But the desire to make a new start in life had overcome those fears, or else these people wouldn't be here. Long way west to where civilization came to an end.
We'll go ahead and make camp. Pass the word. These gentlemen have some things to tell us.
What gentlemen?
He means us.
Oh. Been a long time since anybody called me a gentleman. Ain't sure I fit the description no more, if I ever did.
Donnelly rode along the line of wagons and instructed the drivers to pull the vehicles into a circle. Preacher wondered if they'd been doing that all along. But from the awkwardness with which the drivers handled the maneuver, he guessed that they had.
Well, these folks need help, Preacher. Something ain't right about that fella Buckhalter. That must be why he acted like he had a burr under his saddle right off. He didn't want anybody coming around telling these folks that he's a damn fool.
Yeah, I expect you're right, but we can't take over and guide this wagon train all the way to Oregon territory because we got business of our own waiting for us downriver.
Yeah, I know. Still, though, you can't blame a fella for thinking about it, especially when he's feasting his eyes on what I'm looking at right now.
Preacher was curious enough at the comment that he had to glance around. And when he did, he saw immediately what Uncle Dan meant, because the woman coming toward him was pretty enough to make any man think about spending way more time. The woman wore a long skirt and long-sleeved shirt, like most of the women from the wagon train. But unlike them, she wasn't wearing a bonnet at the moment. The late afternoon sunlight shone brilliantly on the red-gold curls that fell around her lovely face. The drab attire wasn't enough to completely conceal the womanly curves of her body. Preacher and Uncle Dan still sat on their horses. The woman came to a stop a few yards away from them.
Hello, welcome to our little community on wheels. Ned tells me that you're going to be staying with us tonight?
Yes, ma'am. I reckon that's right, although I don't rightly know who this fella Ned is.
My husband, Ned Donnelly.
Oh, yeah. Yes, ma'am. We're acquainted. He seems like a right nice fella.
He is. I'm Lorraine Donnelly.
Well, they call me Preacher, and this is Uncle Dan Sanderson.
Oh, your uncle and nephew.
No, ma'am, we ain't related. Folks just call me Uncle Dan because I was trapping partners with my nephew Pete. He got himself killed a while back, though.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, me too.
Ned tells me there may be hostile Indians close by.
Yes, ma'am.
Do you know what Mr. Buckhalter intends to do about it?
Preacher and Uncle Dan exchanged a glance.
I ain't sure Mr. Buckhalter believed us. He seems to think this ain't Pawnee territory.
But you believe it is.
We killed half a dozen of the varmints yesterday.
Killed? Half a dozen of them?
Yeah. Oh, hell yeah. They ambushed us. We'll be telling the whole bunch about it directly. I think your husband wants everybody to hear about it.
Yes, that sounds like Ned. He thinks everyone should have a voice in any decision. You'll have dinner with us tonight. No arguments.
I wasn't planning on arguing, ma'am. Was you figuring on giving the lady an argument, Preacher?
No.
Fine. We'll eat about sundown.
Yes'm.
Lorraine nodded and turned to go back to the wagon.
Yeah, ooh, that there is a mighty handsome woman.
Yeah, and a mighty married woman, too. I reckon you can forget any ideas about courting her, Uncle Dan.
Me? Hell, boy. I thought you might find out how she'd feel about doing a little sparking. I'm too old for such foolishness.
Oh, you see this gray in my hair? I ain't no spring chicken neither.
No, but it's still summer for you. I'm closing in on winter fast.
Pilgrims finally succeeded in maneuvering their wagons into a reasonably tight circle, which was then tightened up even more as each team was unhitched in turn and the wagons backed closer to each other, leaving only one fairly wide gap where the first team could be hooked up the next morning. Preacher and Uncle Dan brought their saddle horses and pack animals into the circle and picketed them where they would be out of the way. The guides led their mounts into the circle, too. Preacher spotted Buckhalter again for the first time in a while as the bearded man unsaddled his horse and rubbed the animal down. Buckhalter might be a prickly son of a bitch, Preacher thought, but at least he was taking good care of his horse. That had to count for something, Preacher figured. Preacher could tell which wagon belonged to Ned and Lorraine Donnelly because he saw Donnelly tending to the team and Lorraine taking supplies from the wagon to start preparing the evening meal. She set up a cook pot while two boys about 8 and 10 years old took wood from the wood box and began building a fire under the pot. The youngsters had the same reddish-gold hair as Lorraine, so it was obvious they were her sons. Preacher nodded toward the wagon.
Uncle Dan, I'm gonna go talk to Donnelly.
You wouldn't be going over there to be around Ms. Donnelly now, would you?
No, I would not. I got an eye for a pretty gal, same as the next man, but I don't mess with married women, Uncle Dan.
Never said you did. Nice just being close to one, though, ain't it? A pretty gal, I mean.
Preacher didn't answer that. He just walked over to the wagon where Donnelly was putting out buckets of grain for his oxen.
Preacher, I figure I'll gather everybody after supper, and then you can tell them what you told us about the Pawnee.
Well, what good's that gonna do?
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, I've been thinking about it. See, Buckhalter's got his mind made up now. He's not gonna believe me and Uncle Dan. To him, that'd be like backing down. Anyway, what can you do? Is that push on? Buckhalter is right about one thing. You've come too far to turn around and go back to St. Louis. The rest of the folks would never go along with it.
So, what do you suggest?
Well, I already told you, and you're doing it already. You need to be ready for trouble all the time, day and night. Just because things seem quiet and peaceful, don't never take that for granted.
But what if Mr. Buckhalter says that everything is all right and there's no reason to worry?
Well, you hired Buckhalter and those other fellas to get you to Oregon. I reckon you either have to have some faith in him or not. Maybe he knows what he's doing and where he's going.
Maybe. Oh, that doesn't sound very comforting.
Well, there ain't nothing comforting about taking a wagon train clean across this wild country, mister. Sooner you get that notion out your head, the better.
So you're saying that you don't think we should have a camp meeting tonight?
Well, it wouldn't serve any purpose. Do you believe me about that war party?
Yes, I think I do.
Then you talk to the other men you can trust. Spread the word that you all gotta be more careful and more responsible for your own safety, instead of just leaving it all to Buckhalter. Keep scouts out during the day and ford up like this at night. Keep your guns clean and loaded. Keep your powder dry. If there's trouble, circle the wagons like I told you and fight. Fight like the very devil's trying to get his hands on you. Because with the hostiles out here, that's just about what it amounts to.
All right. And I see your point. There's no reason to panic all the women and children.
That's right. Your wife knows about us running into them Pawnee yesterday, so you might want to tell her to keep it to herself. Are those guides, Moran and Stallworth, married?
No, they're single men. They don't have wagons in the train.
Well, tell them not to be flapping their jaws around camp, too. You said that there are two scouts up ahead now?
That's right, Mackenzie and Jennings.
What time do they usually come in?
Well, about this time. They're always back before nightfall, and it's almost sundown.
Sure enough, the two men rode in less than 10 minutes later. They looked a little surprised at seeing the wagons drawn up in such a defensive posture. Preacher made it a point to be close by when they dismounted, and Buckhalter strode over to talk to him.
Any sense of trouble up ahead?
One of the men shook his head. From his lantern jaw and rusty hair, Preacher figured him for Mackenzie, the Scotsman.
Nay, the way is clear.
No hostiles?
No people at all.
Buckhalter shot a sneering glance at Preacher and paid no attention to it. He didn't put a whole lot of stock in what Jennings and Mackenzie said either. If the Pawnee were out there and didn't want to be seen, chances are the scouts wouldn't have seen him. With that dark thought in his mind, Preacher made his way back to the Donnelly's wagon. Lorraine was there talking with Uncle Dan.
Ned'll be back in a few minutes, then we can eat.
Thank you. Where is he?
going around the wagons, talking to some of the other men.
Preacher nodded. Donnelly was proceeding as he had suggested, and discreetly spreading the word among the other men. That would improve the chances of these pilgrims making it all the way to Oregon.
Would you mind helping me with something for a minute?
No, not at all. What you need?
Lorraine led Preacher over to the front of the prairie schooner.
Do you know anything about wagons like this?
Well, a little. I ain't never traveled much in one, though. I'm more of a horsebacker.
Well, this brake lever keeps sticking, and I can't seem to figure out what's wrong with it.
Well, has your husband taken a look at it?
Ned was an attorney before we came west, Preacher. He doesn't know any more about such things than I do.
Preacher stepped closer to the vehicle and reached out to grasp the brake lever. Lorraine was still holding it, too, but he was careful not to touch her hand.
Well, I'll take a look at it, but I ain't promising I can...
At that moment, a hand came down hard on Preacher's shoulder and jerked him around roughly.
Get the hell away from Miss Donnelly, you no good old cat.
The punch was so hard it blurred Preacher's vision for a second. As his eyesight cleared, he saw Mike Moran standing in front of him, both ham-like hands clenched into fists now.
Mr. Moran, what in the world are you doing? There was no reason for you to hit Preacher.
I seen him grab your hand and try to kiss you, ma'am. I seen him making advances to you, plain as day.
That's not true.
I seen it with my own eyes.
Ah! Moran lunged forward, clapped his massive hands on Preacher's shoulders, and flung him away from the wagon.
Don't! This isn't necessary!
I'm gonna stomp you into the ground, mister. Anybody who'd molest a married woman deserves it.
Preacher had only made it up on one knee, and Moran had drawn a big foot back, ready to kick him in the face. Preacher was ready when that booted clodhopper came at him, though. His hand shot up. He grabbed Moran's ankle, stopping the kick before it could cave in his jaw. Then Preacher heaved upward and put the strength of his legs into it as he surged to his feet. Now Pete Stallworth rushed forward with an enraged expression on his broad face.
You can't do that to a friend of mine!
Preacher jerked his head aside so that Pete Stallworth's fist whipped harmlessly past his face and he grabbed the man's arm. Preacher swung Stallworth around and rammed him into the side of the Donnelly wagon. Moran was getting back up by now. He charged Preacher, arms flailing. Preacher ducked under Moran's wild blows. Preacher hooked a right into the guide's belly. That jolted Moran's head back. Like using a hammer to drive a nail, Preacher pounded the side of his right hand into Moran's nose. Moran tripped over Stallworth's legs and went down again. With both of his opponents down for the moment, Preacher reached for one of the pistols at his waist.
Look out, Preacher!
From the corner of his eye, Preacher spotted Buckhalter pointing a pistol at him. Preacher twisted aside as Buckhalter pulled the trigger.
Hold it right there, mister. You best not reach for another pistol. I'll blow a hole in your noggin if you do.
Preacher saw that Uncle Dan had drawn his own pistol, and he now had Buckhalter covered from behind.
Lorraine, that shot didn't hit you, did it?
No, I'm fine.
Preacher, we got a mite of a problem here.
Preacher turned his attention back to his friend and saw that several of the men from the wagon train had pistols and rifles leveled at Uncle Dan. That was a reasonable enough reaction, Preacher supposed. He and Uncle Dan were strangers after all, and the way these folks saw it, the two of them had come into camp and started attacking members of the wagon train.
All right, now everybody just take it easy. Now there don't need to be any more shooting.
That's right.
Ned Donnelly pushed his way through the group of men with raised pistols.
Everyone put your guns down. Now lower your guns, please.
With obvious reluctance, the men from the wagon train followed his orders.
I reckon you can put your gun down too now, Uncle Dan.
But this polecat's liable to have another pistol hit out somewheres on him.
If he does, he won't use it. I give you my word on that.
I was just trying to save my friends. That son of a bitch attacked them. If you ask me, Donnelly, he's the real savage around here, and you invited him into our midst.
Now take it easy.
Why don't you ask Moran what he saw Preacher doing to your wife?
With a frown, Donnelly turned sharply toward Preacher.
What is he talking about? I heard a lot of yelling, but I was on the other side of the camp and I couldn't understand any of it.
Before Preacher could say anything, Lorraine hurried forward and put a hand on her husband's arm.
It's nothing, Ned. This is all just a terrible misunderstanding.
I saw him pawing your wife, Donnelly. I saw it with my own two eyes.
Is there any truth to what Moran says, Preacher?
I just told you there isn't, Ned. Preacher didn't do anything improper. I just asked him to take a look at that brake lever on the wagon while we were waiting for you to get back for supper. That's all.
You're sure?
I think I would know, don't you?
Preacher, your wife's telling the truth. Nothing happened.
Well, how was Mike to know that? It's getting dark. He looked over there and thought he saw something going on. Maybe he jumped to the wrong conclusion.
No maybes about it.
That doesn't change the fact that when he tried to go to Mrs. Donnelly's assistance, Preacher attacked him.
I'm sorry, Mr. Buckhalter, but Mr. Moran struck the first blow.
Now that's enough. I can see now that it was all a misunderstanding like my wife told me. An unfortunate misunderstanding. We're just lucky that no one was badly hurt.
My nose is broke.
We have several men with medical training among the company. Your nose will be tended to, Mr. Moran.
Aided by their friends, Moran and Stallworth stumbled away. Buckhalter followed them, casting hostile glances over his shoulder toward Preacher.
I'm sorry about what happened here.
Yeah, well, forget it. I reckon it'd be better if Uncle Dan and me left. We'll get our horses.
Donnelly and Lorraine looked surprised, and Uncle Dan appeared to be downright devastated.
Leave? Before supper? What in tarnation are you thinking, son?
Well, I'm thinking everybody in this camp believed those lies Moran was yelling, and I'm thinking we ain't welcome here.
That's not true. It was all just a
misunderstanding. Yeah, I know. I heard it set often enough to pass a few minutes, but that don't change nothing. Buckhalter didn't want us here from the first, and he's the wagon master. It's gonna be simpler all around if we're gone. Better for everybody.
I don't know about that. What about those Pawnee?
I already told you everything I can tell you to do. You remember what I said, and you'll be all right. Main thing is to always be ready for trouble.
I really wish you wouldn't go, Preacher.
I'm sorry, ma'am. We're much obliged for your hospitality, ain't we, Uncle Dan?
What? Oh, yeah, I reckon. Much obliged.
Preacher took Uncle Dan's arm and started leading him away from the wagon.
But I'd have been a heap more obliged if I'd gotten on the outside of some supper first.
Hush up. We ain't going very far.
What?
Buckhalter's up to something, and I damn well intend to find out what it is.
Preacher and Dan saddled their horses and got the animals ready to travel. As they were doing so, Ned Donnelly came over.
Is there anything I can say to get you to change your mind about this, Preacher?
Nope. Look, Donnelly, it's just one night's different. Come morning, you'd have headed west, and we'd have headed east anyway. Uncle Dan and I got business in St. Louis, and I can't wait.
I suppose that's true. I just hate to part when there are hard feelings involved.
No, now there ain't no hard feelings. Not where you and your wife are concerned, anyway. You seem like fine folks, and I hope you make a good life for yourselves out yonder in Oregon Territory.
Well, thank you. Good luck with your business in St. Louis.
Preacher didn't hesitate. He gripped the man's hand and gave him a brisk nod. 2 minutes later, Preacher and Uncle Ned were riding away from the camp. As they went out through the gap between wagons, Preacher had seen Buckhalter watching. Soon, they were away from the wagons.
Now, you want to tell me what in blue blazes is going on here, Preacher?
That's what I want to know. Buckhalter dreamed up that scheme. I want to know why he was so desperate to get rid of us that he'd set a trap to murder me.
What are you talking about?
You saw how he was ready to step right in there and blow a hole in my hide? He knew there was going to be a fight before Moran ever threw the first punch. He would have likely got away with it, too, if you hadn't been so quick to holler that warning at me. Even with that, it was a mighty near thing.
Yeah, I thought you was a goner. You're saying that Buckhalter told Moran to jump you like that?
Preacher explained the theory that had formed in his mind, and as he put it into words, he became even more convinced that he was right.
Buckhalter was scared to have us around, scared that we'd mess up some plan of his.
What sort of plan?
Well, that's what we gotta find out. Whatever it is, it must be happening quick. Maybe even tonight, for Buckhalter to get so spooked just because we were there.
So you weren't really mad at them pilgrims. You was just putting on so we'd have an excuse to leave and do some poking around.
Well, shit, yeah, I was a mite put out, but yeah, it was mostly just to make Buckhalter think he'd done got rid of us.
Yeah, he's gonna be mighty surprised when he finds out he's wrong, ain't he?
I damn sure hope so. Let's wait here a few minutes and we'll turn around and head back to the camp so we can keep an eye on it tonight.
I sure wish old Buckhalter had waited until after supper to spring that little trap of his.
Well, after we find out what's going on, maybe Miss Donnelly will have some leftovers you can scrounge.
Preacher, you wasn't really making advances toward Miss Donnelly, were you?
Hell no. You ought to know me better than that, Uncle Dan.
Well, I didn't think you would, but you gotta remember, I ain't really knowed you all that long. And you can know a fella for years and years and then have him surprise you when it comes to women.
Yeah, well, I suppose that's true. But in this case, no, there wasn't nothing dicey going on.
Preacher looked down at the big cur, and despite the poor light, he could tell the dog was standing stiffly, gazing off to the east as another growl came from his throat.
Hush, dog.
Yeah, what's got him stirred up? Some sort of animal, maybe?
Yeah. Maybe some two-legged ones.
Them Pawnee.
Chances are it ain't them. Last sign we saw, they were west of here.
They could have circled around.
Well, let's get over there in the shadows under those trees. Come on, dog.
Quickly, the men and animals moved over into the concealment of the trees. The preacher listened intently.
Rider coming. I reckon dogs smelled them before we could hear them.
The dogs is good about that. I hear them now, too. Sounds like a pretty big bunch.
Preacher thought the same thing. Enough riders were moving through the darkness that they could be the Pawnee warriors led by a standing elk, as Uncle Dan had suggested. Something about that struck Preacher as wrong, though. He thought it was much more likely that the Pawnee would lie in ambush somewhere up ahead along the river, rather than circling around to attack the wagon train by night. The rider came into view, a dark mass moving from left to right in front of Preacher and Uncle Dan.
Stay, dog. Steady.
Too dark to count. Gotta be 30, 40 of the varmints, though.
Yeah, I'm betting they're white, not red. You know what I think is going on here, Uncle Dan?
No, but I'm betting you're about to tell me.
Damn right I am. Those fellas are working with Buckhalter. He'd probably been following the wagon train since it left St. Louis. As soon as everybody settled down for the night, they're going to jump the camp, kill those pilgrims, and loot the wagons.
And you think Buckhalter knows about this, you say?
Yeah, I figure he's the one who planned the whole damn thing. He knew the attack was scheduled for tonight. That's why he didn't want us around. Didn't want us stirring up Donnelly and the others, either. He had them thinking that everything's peaceful and there ain't no danger, so they won't be as watchful and can be took by surprise easier.
Well, we sort of fouled that up by riding in with news of that Pawnee war party.
Yeah, it's probably too late to call off the attack, especially if there's a chance the wagons might be ambushed in the next day or two by Injuns. Buckhalter will want to get his hands on the loot before that can happen.
You know, Preacher, we ain't got a lick of proof that this idea of yours is right. Those fellas who just rode by might not have a damn thing to do with Buckhalter or that wagon train.
That's true, but there's one good way to find out.
Follow them?
Damn right.
You know there's 30 or 40 of them, plus Buckhalter and however many of them other guides are really working for them, and only two of us.
Yeah, but we got something they don't. The element of surprise.
Oh, yeah.
Uncle Dan and Preacher rode out from under the trees and started after the men they suspected of being bandits and outlaws. It became clear in no time at all that the riders were headed for the wagon train's campsite. Preacher and Uncle Dan followed several hundred yards back, far enough so that the men wouldn't be likely to spot them, although Preacher thought they probably wouldn't suspect that anyone was behind them anyway. Before long, the group came to a stop up ahead.
Chances are they'll sneak up on the wagons on foot so nobody will hear their horses coming.
And we'll sneak up on them, right?
That's a plan. Come on, Doe. Stay quiet now.
The two mountain men and the big cur stole forward, all their senses alert. Uncle Dan and Dog followed suit.
Everyone in position?
Yeah, all around the camp.
Good.
We'll attack when Buckhalter gives the signal. Them pilgrims will never know what hit them.
Smart plan. Did Buckhalter think of it?
I figure it was really Beaumont's idea.
Preacher heard that plainly enough, and so did Uncle Dan. The old-timer's hand reached over to Preacher's arm and clenched on it.
Yeah, I heard. Beaumont.
Somehow, Preacher was not surprised that the man had his fingers in this. These would-be robbers worked for Shad Beaumont, and so did Buckhalter.
Well, all we need to do now is wait.
The group would lurk there in the darkness until Buckhalter gave whatever signal they had agreed upon, and then they would rush into the camp and slaughter everyone. Preacher wasn't about to let that happen if there was anything he could do to stop it.
We're gonna take care of the two closest to us. The rest of them are probably spread out pretty good, so if we kill them quiet-like, the others won't know about it.
Sure thing.
Dog, you stay here.
Preacher and Uncle Dan crept forward. After a few moments, Preacher made out the shapes of two men lying on their bellies at the edge of some brush. The wagon camp was visible about 50 yards away. The cooking fires had all died down, but glowing embers were still visible through the gaps between the wagons. Preacher tapped Uncle Dan on the shoulder and pointed to the man on the right. The old-timer nodded in understanding. Preacher crawled toward the man on his left, and they were close enough. Preacher rose to his feet. Uncle Dan stood up beside him. They lifted their knives. Preacher looked over at Uncle Dan, and in the faint starlight, he saw the old-timer wiping his blade off on the shirt of the dead man he knelt on. Then the pair split up, the old-timer skulking off to the right, while Preacher made his silent, deadly way through the darkness to the left. Preacher made it clear through hand gestures that they were to locate and dispose of as many of Beaumont's men as they could in the time they had left before Buckhalter gave the signal to begin the attack on the wagon camp. A sharp tang of whiskey came suddenly to Preacher's nose. One of the men must have brought along a flask. Preacher tightened his grip on his knife as he spotted the man kneeling beside the trunk of a tree facing toward the camp.
That's gonna be your last drink, friend.
The minutes ticked by, and with them went the lives of four more of the bandits. That made at least seven of them. Chances were that Uncle Dan had disposed of a few more by now, too. They were whittling down the odds, just as they had set out to do.
Buckhalter's signal.
The men hidden around the perimeter of the camp leaped to their feet and rushed toward the wagons. Preacher was already on his feet. He shoved the knife back into its sheath and pulled both pistols from behind his belt. Preacher ran up behind one of the attackers. He didn't waste time or breath calling out to get him to turn around. Preacher veered to his left and closed in on one of the other bandits as the man charged toward the wagons. Preacher leaped past that fallen body and headed for another of the attackers about 20 yards away. This one must have seen him shoot the other man because he turned and brought up the rifle in his hands. Preacher dived, rolled, and was up again. The man was only a few feet away by now. Preacher lowered his shoulder and crashed into the bandit. Preacher wrenched the flintlock out of the man's hands and brought the butt down hard in the middle of his face. Preacher loped toward the camp. The immigrants were putting up a decent fight. Preacher saw a couple of outlaws go down from the shots coming from the circle of wagons. Then he saw a varmint kneel and aim a rifle toward the wagons. Preacher went for his knife. The blade went into the man's back to the hilt and drove him forward. Whoa! Shit! Preacher hurdled a wagon tongue, and he saw a man struggling to reload his rifle. He recognized the man as Ned Donnelly.
Hold your fire, damn it! It's me, Preacher!
Donnelly hesitated, giving Preacher the chance to push the rifle barrel aside.
Preacher? Yeah, that's right. You're under attack by bandits. Don't let them inside the circle of wagons. You got a chance.
You're not one of them?
Hell no, I'm not one of them. I've been out there trying to stop them. Where's Buckhalter?
Well, I haven't seen him. I heard him yelling something a little while ago. He's still around somewhere.
Preacher turned around and saw Lorraine approaching.
Do you need powder and shot for your pistols?
I dang sure do.
With swift, practiced efficiency, Preacher began reloading the weapons.
You better hunt some cover, ma'am.
I'm gonna stay right here and reload for Ned. We have two rifles.
Well, keep your head down as much as you can. Where are the youngsters?
In the wagon between our trunks.
Preacher nodded again and then began loping around the circle to see how the rest of the defenders were holding up. Suddenly, another bandit bounded up onto the wagon tongue and started over. Preacher quickly drew his knife. The man fell off the wagon tongue and landed face down on the ground. The attack had been blunted before it even began, and now it was losing the rest of its momentum. Preacher didn't know if any more of Beaumont's men were out there. Maybe they were all dead. Of course, it was possible, too, that the survivors had given up and lit a shuck out of there.
Preacher!
Preacher looked around and saw Uncle Dan trotting toward him. The old-timer's beard was streaked with red from a bullet graze on his cheek. But other than that, he seemed to be all right.
I think they rabbited.
I hope you're right. You think we should have a look-see?
I don't know any other way to be sure, although I ain't all that fond of the idea.
Yeah, neither am I. We best reload all our guns before we venture out there.
I'm going with you.
Preacher looked around and saw that Ned Donnelly had come up on his other side.
I ain't so sure you ought to do that.
I am. I'm the captain of this wagon train. The safety of its members is my responsibility.
All right. You have it your way. Let's get.